Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Toby Altizer with you. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in talking about the Washington Commanders. We'll get back into the Nationals to wrap up things here today. Bobby Blanco joins us at 2:30. We'll talk with him about Dylan Cruz making his debut and wrap up with the Nationals. But right now, we're still talking about the Dotson trade. What do you make of it? 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. Also, do you think that the Commanders can get by without having a number two wide receiver? So I think that they can. I think that there is a way that they're going to be able to do this. And, you know, the question immediately goes to who steps up. And listen to G&D the other day, and I think Danny laid it out well. Like, I don't know that it matters who steps up. I don't know that it does. Because I don't know that it is somebody is individually that is going to step up. I think offensively, they're going to find a way, as they would say in Moneyball, to make it up in the aggregate. You know, we're not going to be able to replace Jahan Dotson in like a talent way. You know, he definitely was their second most talented receiver, but they can make it up in the aggregate by who's going to fill in. And the other part about this too is, there was already questions about the number two wide receiver with Jahan Dotson in town. There's no guarantee that he was going to be the guy that was the number two wide receiver, so to speak. So I think there's ways that they can get around it. I think that obviously Zacchaeus is going to be a big part of that. De'Ami Brown is going to be a big part of that. I think those are the two early in the year, and you're going to see it mix depending upon what they're trying to do. And part of it too that makes a little bit of sense is we've seen De'Ami Brown do well in preseason before and then do essentially nothing in the season. It might be different this year because when you think of De'Ami Brown, what was he drafted out of North Carolina to do? He was a deep ball kind of guy. And it's interesting because he wasn't necessarily the fastest, but he was a deep ball, vertical style of receiver. And when you think of the quarterbacks that they've had here and the offenses that they've ran here since he's been here, Scott Turner was not a vertical offense. Eric Bieniemy, we thought he'd be a more vertical offense, but because of the lack of protection up front, it was pass every down, but it wasn't as vertical as you would expect. You bring in Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury, and if you're going to play to Jaden's strengths, it is more vertical. It is vertical. Not to say that they're not going to run quick game and run the ball and some other stuff. We're going to get into that. But it is a little more vertical because that's what Jaden was so good at. I mean, go watch his highlights. Half of them are slot fades to Malik Nabers. Nothing wrong with that. But he excels at the deep ball and excels throwing more vertical down the field. We already saw that. You get a screenplay called on, what was it, 3rd and 4, and Jaden checks to a go ball. I love that. Sometimes I don't, though. But we'll get into that. We'll worry about that when that happens. I was very accustomed to Packers fans from my time in Wisconsin, Packers fans getting mad at Aaron Rodgers for 3rd and 2 throwing a deep ball to Devontae all the time. They got frustrated by it, and I don't doubt that that would happen here if that becomes a frequent occurrence for Jaden Daniels. But regardless, I wouldn't be surprised we see Diami stand out a little more during the season like we've already seen. Zacchaeus has shown nicely. He's going to have to step up in terms of actual receivers. I think those are the two that are going to fill it. Luke McCaffrey, and a lot of people are big on him. I think he could, but it's not going to be early on. If anything, I think it's, you know, week 8, week 9, maybe even after the bye week when you've got just a couple of weeks to go. But, you know, next year for sure. But this year, early first half of the year, it wouldn't surprise me as a lot of people are thinking he could be. I think they'll work him in, they want to use him in the slot, and we'll find ways. But I think Luke McCaffrey helps out more in the second half of the year than the first. And that goes with Ben Sinnott as well. I think he has to step up. And he gives you a unique feature in that Zach Ertz is more the route runner, vertical style of tight end, the possession style guy that can run all the routes. I think Ben Sinnott can do some of that stuff, but I think they're going to find ways to just get the ball in his hands and let him work. Just go. You know, whether it's something that's short and he can make room after the catch, whether it's like tight end screens. So I think those are the guys that really need to step up in Jahan Dotson's absence. And I don't know that it needs to be any specific guy. I think that it's a group of guys that have to fill in. But part of the reason, too, that I think you can get by without a true number two wide receiver is when you look at this offense and the way that they're going to do it, I think your true number two wide receiver, even if it was Jahan, might be your fourth option. Because number one's going to be Terry in the passing game. Number two is probably Ertz at this point. Number three might be the combo in the backfield of Eckler and B-Rob. I mean, heck, they might line Eckler up in the slot a decent bit and just let him go to work out there and, you know, motion him out of the backfield and do things that way. I think there's a good chance you see a lot of that. So that running back might be the third option, so to speak, and then you're getting to the second wide receiver. I think they're looking at this as just a conglomeration of all of these guys. There's really probably no true number two option. There's a number one option, which is Terry, and then there's everyone else. And so, depending upon what the other team does, I think a lot of it is going to be focused on Terry. They're just going to find ways to make it work outside of, you know, Terry just being the number one guy. Who's the number two? They might not have anything. They might just work with the conglomeration of the guys. And part of the reason that I'm excited about this team, I saw Rooster was talking about this the other day. He said that Cliff Kingsbury maybe showed a little bit too much in preseason. I don't necessarily agree or disagree with that. I don't really care. But I think that what we did see in small snippets is that this offense can be so incredibly versatile and multiple that we're going to be able to see Cliff Kingsbury dial things up individually each and every week to exploit defenses. Because I think even they have to be floored by what Jaden looks like just as a straight dropback passer. Like, I think when you think back to RG3's rookie year, they had to run, it's not a gimmicky offense, but they had to run a new college-style offense. Not gimmicky, but more of a college style that now teams can't really just run that style of offense anymore because defense has adjusted. But they could run that style of offense, and RG3 could make it work. But if you would have asked RG3 to step in where Andrew Luck was, and they were going to run a pro-style offense, RG3 would not have won Rookie of the Year, right? I think it's different in that. I think if you just said Jaden was going to drop back and play traditional quarterback, Aaron Rodgers style, you know, like he's going to be able to move a little bit, but think about what Aaron Rodgers is going to run with the Jets this year. There's not going to be quarterback runs. There's not going to be any of that. It's going to be occasional rollouts. It's going to be occasionally the quarterback will scamper for 3 or 4, but that's off script. There's not going to be a lot of running from the quarterback. It's going to be drop back, pass, maybe you make some moves outside the pocket, but for the most part, it's on a script sort of thing, right? I think Jaden could be fine in that. I'm not saying that's at his best. I think you still got to cater to some of his strengths. I think Jaden could make it work just dropping back and passing in a traditional style Jared Goff style role. I think he could be good at that. Whereas that's where I think he's different than when, you know, some of the comps were like Lamar. I don't think Lamar could do that. I think Lamar is a better passer than he gets credit for, but I think that where Jaden is right now is definitely better than Lamar was when he came in. It's closing in on where Lamar is, period, right now, I think. If not, I don't want to get crazy because Lamar's won MVPs. We haven't seen Jaden throw a pass that actually matters in the NFL yet. But just from what I've seen, like, Jaden looks like a nuanced enough passer. I'm surprised by it. I think that a lot of the people in the building probably are even more, like, they're happy, obviously, but I don't think they expected this level of sophistication as a just pocket passer from Jaden. And so I think he can make it work. That said, that's obviously going to be part of some of it. Just dropping back and passing, they're not going to run that style of offense. They're going to run so many different things. I think you saw they're going to obviously run the ball a lot. I think that's going to be a huge part of the offense this year. You want to know one way that you can make up for not having a number two wide receiver? By handing it off to Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler and letting them gain the tough yards. I think that's going to be a big part of the offense. And then the things that excite me, because I think these are where it gets dynamic. Jaden could run the drop back pass game, and they will do that to an extent. But I think a big part of their game is going to be the quick game, quick stuff, quick hitters. You saw it to Terry, just a simple stop route. Terry's able to turn a 6-yard catch into a 15-yard completion because he's able to turn up the field. I think those sorts of things are going to be a big part of the offense. I think the read option on the outside, they're going to mix that in quite a bit because that helps out your run game. What you don't understand, like, that helps out just your standard hand the ball off to Brian Robinson run game because, you know, if your edge rusher just keeps crashing down trying to stop B-Rob, get an extra guy in there to make the tackle, suddenly Jaden pulls it, he's gone for 25 around the edge. So that's going to help out your run game just by running that every so often. Now, I want Jaden to protect himself. I don't want him being foolish the way that he runs. But, yeah, I think that that's going to be a big part of it. The other thing, we hadn't seen tons of it. But I would love the RPO. And I think the RPO is going to be a big part of it as well. I think if you go back and watch, maybe I'm wrong on this, maybe this was more of a true play action, but I think it was an RPO when in the last game he threw that pass over the middle to John Bates. Believe that was RPO. Maybe it was just true play action and he wanted to hit the pop pass to John Bates. But either way, those sorts of plays, RPO style actions, where he's going to have the chance to hand it off or throw a smoke screen out to the outside to Terry, or he's going to be able to hit a seam route to one of the tight ends, or he's going to be able to throw a slant back behind. Like, he excels at that sort of stuff because it's good ball placement, it's quick decision making. I think that's the beauty of this. Depending upon what your defense is that given week, they can game plan where they can throw in more RPOs, they can throw more traditional drop back passes, they can run the ball a little heavier, they can run the read option. I think that's what gives you so much more to do here with Jaden Daniels. And I think that's how they're going to make up for the fact that now they lost maybe their second most talented receiver, even though he might not have fit in as their wide receiver too. That's how you make up for it. They're going to run a variety of different offenses, and they're going to make up for it by getting B-Rob more involved in the pass game, Ekeler involved in the pass game. Zach Ertz is going to be a lot better than I think a lot of people expect. We've talked about that, but I think just watching him, he's going to be an integral part of this offense. It's going to be important to keep him healthy, but how do the guys continue to pick up the slack around him? I don't know that there's any one guy that's going to fill in, but if you make up for it with a conglomeration of guys and then Cliff can kind of scheme the rest of it, I think that's how you can make a successful offense without a true number two wide receiver. Let's take a break. When we can come back, we'll continue talking about the Commanders at 2:30. Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports joins the show.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
MGM National Harbor listener lines are open, 800-636-1067. You can also tweet at me at Toby_Altizer. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll talk with Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports. We'll get back into the Nationals with him. But wrapping up the Commanders' Jahan Dotson discussion, one thing that I like about this too, and this just goes back to having a real general manager and having someone that's outside the organization, the part about him trading him to the Eagles I think is really interesting. You think back to draft night when he traded with the Eagles, and they end up with Cooper DeJean. In turn, the Commanders end up with some good players themselves. But what I like about this is Adam Peters is just going to do what Adam Peters thinks is best. He's not going to go according to the norms. He's not going to go according to what he feels like he has to do because of Josh Harris or anyone else. He's going to evaluate what he thinks is the best option, and he's going to do it, even if it means trading in division, and that's what he deems best.
I have a question for you, because this has also hit my mind a couple times. Just trading with Howie Roseman. Howie is starting to get a reputation for just acquiring guys with name value.
Yeah.
Do you think Adam Peters has marked him as the in-division sucker?
I don't know that he has.
Because
maybe down the line we'll find that out, but I don't know that he has. Like, I think the value the Eagles got for Jahan Dotson,
good value, but
I think it's fantastic, and I think doing what they did to get a Cooper DeJean to help out their secondary makes some sense as well. Although anybody that's like worried about Cooper DeJean, I would rather have Mikey Sanristil.
Exactly, I'm not too worried.
Sanristil, I tell people this all the time. Like, to me, my favorite, like the pick that is going to be the most important, and you're obviously going to like the most, is going to be Jaden Daniels.
Of course,
to me, the signing and free agency. A lot of people like the Bobby Wagner, and that's understandable.
Yeah.
To me, the pick that I really liked that made the most sense to me was Tyler Biadasz. But the things that get me fired up, the things that get me like on the edge of my seat for the season, are the Frankie Luvu signing and the Mike Sanristil draft pick. Those things get me on the edge of my seat ready to go. Mm-hmm. Because those guys, I think, are going to be real difference makers. I don't know that he has, though, bookmarked him as like the sucker. But I think also you got to... Howie Roseman's an incredibly active GM.
True, but going back to the Jahan thing, like, reports have come out that we offered Jahan to the Niners, and they were like, no thank you.
Well, I also don't think he fits the Niners. If he doesn't fit here, he doesn't fit the Niners.
That's true.
Like, if he doesn't fit here where he can't block, and yeah, that's a big thing, he can't fit with the Niners.
I think that's why Kyle Shanahan sat Brandon Ayuk for, like, the first half of his rookie season.
Yeah, so if he's not going to be able to block here, which is, I think, a big issue, mm-hmm. you know, you talk about the physicality, that gets mentioned all the time with Dan Quinn. He's not talking about running a route.
True.
There is physicality in running a route. You know, when you get to the top of the route and you have to find a way to make some separation, but and get off press, some of the physicality there. The physicality that he's talking about, just go back and watch the preseason games, a couple of times that they've thrown a screen, which is going to be a big part of the offense.
Yep.
This year, I already mentioned quick game, sorts of things like that. If you're not going to be able to block when he tries to throw a smoke screen to Terry, or you're trying to throw like a bubble to someone, then sorry, you can't be on the field.
Yeah.
And guess what? If it's something where I can't put you on the field in the slot, and I have to take you off every time we're going to throw a screen, well, then that telegraphs what's happening.
Exactly.
So, I think that's a big part of it. And so, I don't know that it's necessarily a sucker thing. Is it just, it didn't fit here. Jahan didn't fit here. And Howie Roseman was a willing suitor. San Francisco didn't want him because he wasn't going to block there. And I'm sure there are other teams that wanted him. Maybe they weren't willing to do whatever the trade was. You know, I have a hard time thinking that, you know, a third and a fifth was like it's not a high asking price for Jahan, that you gave up a fifth to get a third. It's really not. But at the same point, Philly was willing to make the deal, and I think this just goes back to, like, Adam Peters is going to do what he deems best. He does not care that it's going to help out a division opponent. He does not care. He's going to go and out there and whatever he deems as best for his franchise. I don't agree with the fact that, like, you should disregard considerably. Like, it does not matter that it's in division. You shouldn't care at all. You just do what's best for your organization because, yes, you might be able to help your own team, but you might fortify an opponent. So I don't think that you can completely disregard it. But at the same point, if it's significantly your better offer to go and trade him to Philadelphia versus, say, Indianapolis, just trade him to Philly. And I like that about Adam Peters. He came in, he's got a philosophy, he's going to do the best for the burgundy and gold, and I like that. I think it's a cool thing to see that this franchise has a legitimate general manager. And I also like, too, like, this dude was active this offseason. He signed a ton of guys. He's made some trades. I think he's well-connected. And I think it just shows you already that he knows what he's doing. We haven't even seen his guy step on the field yet. Like, this guy understands what he's... I think there's a reason there's so much confidence around this team, and maybe not the over-the-top confidence like we've seen in previous seasons. Like, one of the things that G and D have talked about a lot is it doesn't feel like the excitement level for this year compares to last year. And I tend to agree. Like, last year, for whatever reason, with Sam Howell, there seemed to be a juice that at times we haven't felt this offseason going into this year. You want to know why, though? It feels like last year, even though you're coming off the high of Dan Snyder selling, last year, with Ron being a lame duck, it felt very flash in the pan-ish. You know, maybe you find your franchise guy, but it was something where I was like, you're trying to find a high there when in reality you're not going to be able to sustain it. Here? This seems like a slow burn where it's gradually better and it's going to get gradually better next year and it's going to keep building, but this is the right building blocks to build a sustained winner and hopefully a sustained Super Bowl contender. And so that's why I don't feel like the over-the-top excitement has been there, because this, it's not supposed to be over-the-top exciting, although there's the rookie quarterback, but he's not building it to be like, we're going all in on this year and then next year we're going to suck again. No, it's, we're going to build in 2024 so we can keep building in 2025, so we can keep building in 2026, so that as you keep going, your foundation is guys that you have drafted like they have in San Francisco, where they haven't won a Super Bowl, but every single time we go into the year, you know who we're talking about potentially winning the Super Bowl? San Francisco. That's what he's trying to do. I think that's why maybe you haven't seen some of the excitement, but I think it's going to continue to grow as we see Adam build year to year to year. Take a break. When we come back, Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports will join us as we get back into some Nationals talk here on Overtime on The Fan. Welcome back. 106.7 The Fan. It's Overtime. Toby Altizer with you till 3 o'clock. Let's get back into some Nationals baseball. And to do that, let's get out to the BetQL guest hotline, bringing our guy from Masson Sports, Bobby Blanco. Bobby, what's going on, dude?
Toby, what's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Got to start. You're a Commanders fan, so I want to ask you about this Dotson trade. We'll get into the Nationals, but what'd you make of the Dotson trade?
I'm literally wearing my brand new Commander's snapback hat, so I'm prepared to talk about this. I thought it was pretty surprising. I think we all kind of like saw the notification on our phones. I was like, oh, wow. But I just listened to you talk about it, and I think it's a good thing. I mean, Adam Peters clearly came in and looked at this roster and was, and he'd be like, nah. He was just like, this is not going to work. I don't want any of these guys, and I think it's just very telling of the Ron and Marty Party's draft history of just how bad they were. And we tried to, like, you know, dress up the pig as much as possible as fans. The past couple of years, been like, oh, we fell in love with this guy, Dotson. Oh, we tried to make Emmanuel Forbes a thing. And then now we're coming down to actual football people making decisions, and they're just like, no, it's not going to work. We're going to have to move forward with this. So I thought it was surprising, but I appreciate the real adults in the room making football decisions for the future.
No doubt about it. We got real adults with the Nationals as well, and Mike Rizzo's made the decision that Monday is going to be the day that Dylan Cruz makes his major league debut. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's so exciting, right? I mean, I think we've all kind of felt that it was coming soon, and September at the latest, because the roster expanded by two spots. But, you know, I kind of always had this upcoming week circled on my calendar as a possibility, because one, of course, you get Juan Soto and the Yankees at Nationals Park. It's an extended homestand before you hit the road again. And you're, I think, technically the Sunday, September 1st is a Sunday. So I don't think you're wanting to, you know, have him debut on the 1st before hitting the road. So this makes kind of sense. And, you know, I think there's also some, you know, calculation to it too, because I picked this week because, you know, James, they gave James about 50 games, a little over close to 200 at-bats at AAA before they deemed he was ready. Of course, his numbers were a lot better than what Dylan has put up, but Dylan has about 50 games. He has had well over 200 at-bats. You know, the average and OPS aren't where James was, but James was kind of otherworldly at AAA. And he's been hot over the past, you know, couple of weeks. I mean, I think that Dylan is just a player that elevates his game to the level that he's at. We saw him ease into Double A at the end of last year, and then early on this year. And then once he got bumped up to Rochester, he struggled for a little bit. But then once he got his footing, he's been pretty much around a 300 hitter at Rochester for the past couple of weeks. So I think that was the calculation of why it's coming up next week. And man, Monday night against the Yankees and Juan Soto, it's going to be really fun.
I wanted to ask you about this, talking with Bobby Blanco of Masson Sports. You mentioned that he kind of elevates his game, and we haven't seen an exceptionally dominant period from Dylan Cruz like we saw from James Wood, where, you know, we were talking about potentially making the opening day roster, and then he was great in April and May before he got hurt, and eventually we saw him in July, but he was dominant through long stretches in AAA. And really, at any level, we haven't necessarily seen Dylan Cruz have that sort of dominance. What kind of player can Nats fans expect? Because they see James Wood, and this guy comes up, and he looks like a potential MVP in the future, where, you know, maybe he's hitting 30 or 40 bombs, stealing bags, playing good defense, and just an electric baseball player. I don't know that Dylan Cruz fits that same sort of profile, but what can they expect out of Cruz?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know if Dylan is going to be an MVP type of candidate player when he comes up in his career. I do think he is his, you know, baseline, you know, at very minimum, he's going to be like a 2020 guy for you. Guy can hit 20 bombs, steal 20 bases at least, driving a lot of runs, score a lot of runs. You know, he's just kind of a complete overall package. Where, you know, so is James, but James just might be a freak of nature, different level of player right now. That's why he was the centerpiece of the Juan Soto deal a couple of years ago. Whereas Dylan was, we saw him dominate college baseball in the best conference. We saw him win a national championship, number two overall pick. Then we saw him enter, you know, professional league, dominate low A ball, completely skip high A ball, and then kind of settle into Double A and Triple A. But, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I don't think his ceiling is as high as James's, but I think he still has a pretty high floor where, you know, he is going to be an all-star caliber, you know, gold glove, maybe even silver slugger kind of caliber guy. You know, he'll bring in some hardware, I feel like. That might not be MVPs, but he's still going to be an above-average everyday player for you, either in center field, right field, wherever they end up putting him. And I think that's a really good starting point for someone who would take that the number two overall spot.
Talking with Bobby Blanco from Mass and Sports, you mentioned a potential Gold Glove down the line. We had this discussion earlier about where does he fit in defensively. One would think that eventually he takes over in center field, but Jacob Young is playing so good in center field that maybe you delay that, or you know Jacob Young is going to take ownership of that. Where does he slot in defensively, not necessarily for this year, but for the long term?
Yeah, I think for the rest of the season, you're going to see him play in right field. I know that he started playing a lot more right over the past week or so at Rochester before, you know, obviously getting the news that he's going to be coming up next week. So that's where he'll play this year. But moving forward, I mean, you know, maybe that'll be a position battle we look forward to come spring training where, all right, who's going to take over in center field? Can Dylan outperform Jacob Young, who at that point might already be a Gold Glover, Platinum Glover in center field? And, you know, I think Dylan and Jacob have very high, similar profiles when it comes to defense and even speed on the base paths. But I just think Dylan's going to be an overall better bat at the plate. I think he's just going to be a complete hitter. You're talking about a guy who could probably bat leadoff and, you know, maybe bump C.J. Abrams down and have James Wood bat third or fourth, whatever it is. I mean, that's going to be a fun lineup for the last month of the season. But I just think Dylan is a better overall player. While Jacob might be a better defender, you know, I don't know if you have Jacob block him in center field for the long term. Right now he is because he's in the midst of a, you know, possibly a career-setting year defensively in center field. You're not going to mess with that. But maybe it's more of an open competition come spring training, and who knows who else they add in that outfit. They're going to need to add pieces this offseason. If next year is really the year that the Nationals have circled, that they're going to be competitive again, fighting for a playoff spot, they need to add pieces in this offseason, and that might include a corner outfielder. So then you're having a battle between Jacob Young and Dylan Cruz in center.
Talking with Bobby Blanco from Mass and Sports. I want to talk about some other guys here in just a second, but I want to ask you about this as well, because you're in that clubhouse quite often, and there's a lot of good leaders in the clubhouse, but not necessarily outspoken guys. Like, you think about, especially the younger guys, James Wood's very quiet. I think he's a good leader, but he's very quiet. CJ, he's taken on a bigger leadership role. They've talked about that plenty, but he's a quieter sort of guy, even though he has a little bit of swagger. I think Dylan Cruz is going to step in and give that swagger that Nats fans got used to from like a Bryce Harper and a Juan Soto. How much do you think he's going to bring the team in terms of energy and that sort of dynamic in the clubhouse and in the dugout?
That's a great point. I haven't really thought of it too much in that sense, but I think you're right. I think Dylan is more of an outspoken kind of guy. I mean, like they all do, he plays with like his hair on fire, but you know, when it comes to talking with the media, when it comes to talking to, you know, being around the guys, he's a little more outspoken. And I think that comes with, you know, being the best player in college baseball a couple of years ago. He's used to the spotlight, right? I mean, James Wood and C.J. Abrams were both drafted out of high school and didn't really have that kind of adjustment period when it comes to being in the spotlight as much. Sure, they were in, like, high school circuits, and, you know, I know James said IMG and everything, but it's very different than playing, you know, at LSU and being on a national championship team and then being a number two overall pick. I think that kind of aspect that Dylan is going to be used to, he will be a little more vocal. And you're right, that is just more his personality as opposed to James and CJ. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic as well. And I think it could be good for that clubhouse too to have somebody a little more outspoken and take leadership. Now, the good thing is too, this is going to be such a young team. All these guys have spent a significant amount of time together. A lot of them came up through Rochester together. So there's not going to be that need or adjustment period of camaraderie between them all. So they're all kind of pretty much used to each other and, you know, who leads in certain ways. So that's a good thing, though, is that you're not going to have, you know, guys stumbling over each other or rubbing each other the wrong way, because they all should be pretty familiar with each other from their time, not just this year, but end of last year through spring training. And then now here we are at the major leagues together.
What did you make of Mackenzie Gore yesterday? It seemed like in his last start that he had found something for the first five innings, and he struggled in the sixth. Yesterday, he's able to get through six, only giving up the one run. Has he found something that he can maybe build on down the stretch here?
I hope so, and I think so. I mean, these last two outings have been very encouraging. I was in the one in Philadelphia, and that was a big one because, you know, they had worked on him in his bullpen session leading up to that. They were trying to adjust some things, get him lower in the zone, kind of getting him to reset. I don't think they seriously considered shutting him down or whatever, but you know, we were getting close to that point where, you know, if he kept going down that trajectory of how bad he has been over the past couple of months, something had to be done. He turned that around in Philly. He pitched 5 strong innings. I know he ended up getting charged with 4 in the 6th, where it kind of all fell apart. But those first 5 innings looked more like vintage Mackenzie Gore. And then last night was terrific. Yeah, he got hit 7 times, but only gave up 1 run. The no walks is big for me, too. I think that was his first appearance without a walk since, I think, the last time he faced the Braves earlier this year. So that was a big step forward for him. So I do think it's encouraging. These last 2 combined outings, only giving up a total of 6 runs and really only 1 bad inning between, you know, 12 almost. So hopefully that's another step forward. You figure he's probably got between like 5 and 7 starts left of the year. Hopefully those are similar like that and strong. He can stay low in the zone. He can not issue the free walk, keep the ball in the yard. I know the leadoff homer last night, everyone's thinking, oh boy, here we go again. But give Mackenzie a lot of credit. He buckled down from there and pretty much shut down that Braves lineup from that first batter on.
Bobby, appreciate the time, man. Make sure you check out all of his work at massinsports.com, and appreciate you hopping on, dude.
Yeah, thanks, Toby. Thanks for having me. Can I see you Monday?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Come on, Bobby. I think hopefully all of D.C. is there on Monday. That's what we're hoping.
Yeah, I think
kick all these Yankees fans out.
Yeah. Fill in that park. Red and white, not blue and pinstripes.
Absolutely. Bobby, appreciate it, dude.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo. Remarkable fight. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Welcome back. 106.7 The Fan. It's overtime. Toby Altizer with you till 3 o'clock. Let's get back into some Nationals baseball. And to do that, let's get out to the BetQL guest hotline, bringing our guy from Masson Sports, Bobby Blanco. Bobby, what's going on, dude?
Toby, what's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Got to start. You're a Commanders fan, so I want to ask you about this Dotson trade. We'll get into the Nationals, but what'd you make of the Dotson trade?
I'm literally wearing my brand new Commander's snapback hat, so I'm prepared to talk about this. I thought it was pretty surprising. I think we all kind of like saw the notification on our phones. I was like, oh, wow. But I just listening to you talk about it, and I think it's a good thing. I mean, Adam Peters clearly came in and looked at this roster and he'd be like, nah. He was just like, this is not going to work. I don't want any of these guys, and I think it's just very telling of the Ron and Marty Party's draft history of just how bad they were. And we tried to, like, you know, dress up the pig as much as possible as fans the past couple of years, and like, oh, we fell in love with this guy, Dotson. Oh, we tried to make Emmanuel Forbes a thing. And then now we're coming down to actual football people making decisions, and they're just like, no, it's not going to work. We're going to have to move forward with this. So I thought it was surprising, but I appreciate the real adults in the room making football decisions for the future.
No doubt about it. We got real adults with the Nationals as well, and Mike Rizzo's made the decision that Monday is going to be the day that Dylan Cruz makes his major league debut. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's so exciting, right? I mean, I think we've all kind of felt that it was coming soon, and September at the latest, because the roster expanded by two spots. But, you know, I kind of always had this upcoming week circled on my calendar as a possibility because, one, of course, you get Juan Soto and the Yankees at Nationals Park. It's an extended homestand before you hit the road again. And you're technically open to Sunday, August, September 1st is a Sunday. So I don't think you're wanting to, you know, have him debut on the 1st before hitting the road. So this makes kind of sense. And, you know, I think there's also some, you know, calculation to it, too, because I picked this week because, you know, they gave James about 50 games, a little over close to 200 at-bats at AAA before they deemed he was ready. Of course, his numbers were a lot better than what Dylan has put up, but Dylan has about 50 games. He has hit well over 200 at-bats. You know, the average and OPS aren't where James was, but James was kind of otherworldly at AAA. And he's been hot over the past, you know, couple of weeks. I mean, I think that Dylan is just a player that elevates his game to the level that he's at. We saw him ease into AA at the end of last year, and then early on this year. And then once he got bumped up to Rochester, he struggled for a little bit. But then once he got his footing, he's been pretty much around a 300 hitter at Rochester for the past couple of weeks. So I think that was the calculation of why it's coming up next week. And, man, Monday night against the Yankees and Juan Soto, it's going to be really fun.
I wanted to ask you about this, talking with Bobby Blanco of Madison Sports. You mentioned that he kind of elevates his game, and we haven't seen an exceptionally dominant period from Dylan Cruz, like we saw from James Wood, where, you know, we were talking about potentially making the opening day roster, and then he was great in April and May before he got hurt, and eventually we saw him in July. But he was dominant through long stretches in AAA, and really, at any level, we haven't necessarily seen Dylan Cruz have that sort of dominance. What kind of player can Nats fans expect? Because they see James Wood, and this guy comes up, and he looks like a potential MVP in the future, where, you know, maybe he's hitting 30 or 40 bombs, stealing bags, playing good defense, and just an electric baseball player. I don't know that Dylan Cruz fits that same sort of profile, but what can they expect out of Cruz?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know if Dylan is going to be an MVP type of candidate player when he comes up in his career. I do think he is his, you know, baseline, you know, at very minimum, he's going to be like a 2020 guy for you. That guy can hit 20 bombs, steal 20 bases at least, drive in a lot of runs, score a lot of runs. You know, he's just kind of a complete overall package where, you know, so is James, but James just might be a freak of nature, different level of player right now. That's why he was the centerpiece of the Juan Soto deal a couple of years ago. Whereas Dylan was, we saw him dominate college baseball in the best conference. We saw him win a national championship, number two overall pick. Then we saw him enter, you know, professional league, dominate low A ball, completely skip high A ball, and then kind of settle into double A and triple A. But, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I don't think his ceiling is as high as James's, but I think he still has a pretty high floor where, you know, he is going to be an all-star caliber, you know, gold glove, maybe even silver slugger kind of caliber guy. You know, he'll bring in some hardware, I feel like. That might not be MVPs, but he's still going to be an above-average everyday player for you, either in center field, right field, wherever they end up putting him. And I think that's a really good starting point for someone who was taken at the number two overall spot.
Talking with Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports, you mentioned a potential gold glove down the line. We had this discussion earlier about where does he fit in defensively. One would think that eventually he takes over in center field, but Jacob Young is playing so good in center field that maybe you delay that, or you know, Jacob Young is going to take ownership of that. Where does he slot in defensively, not necessarily for this year, but for the long term?
Yeah, I think for the rest of the season, you're going to see him playing right field. I know that he started playing a lot more right over the past week or so at Rochester before, you know, obviously getting the news that he's going to be coming up next week. So that's where he'll play this year. But moving forward, I mean, you know, maybe that'll be a position battle we look forward to come spring training where, all right, who's going to take over in center field? Can Dylan outperform Jacob Young, who at that point might already be a gold glover, platinum glover in center field? And, you know, I think Dylan and Jacob have very high, similar profiles when it comes to defense and even speed on the base pass. But I just think Dylan's going to be an overall better bat at the plate. I think he's just going to be a complete hitter. You're talking about a guy who could probably bat leadoff and, you know, maybe bump C.J. Abrams down and have James Wood bat third or fourth, whatever it is. I mean, that's going to be a fun lineup for the last month of the season. But I just think Dylan is a better overall player. While Jacob might be a better defender, you know, I don't know if you have Jacob block him in center field for the long term. Right, right now he is because he's in the midst of a, you know, possibly a career-setting year defensively in center field. You're not going to mess with that. But maybe it's more of an open competition come spring training, and who knows who else they add in that outfit. They're going to need to add pieces this offseason. If next year is really the year that the Nationals have circled, that they're going to be competitive again, fighting for a playoff spot, they need to add pieces in this offseason, and that might include a corner outfielder. So then you're having a battle between Jacob Young and Dylan Cruz in center.
Talking with Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports. I want to talk about some other guys here in just a second, but I want to ask you about this as well, because you're in that clubhouse quite often, and there's a lot of good leaders in the clubhouse, but not necessarily outspoken guys. Like, you think about, especially the younger guys, James Wood's very quiet. I think he's a good leader, but he's very quiet. CJ, he's taken on a bigger leadership role. They've talked about that plenty, but he's a quieter sort of guy, even though he has a little bit of swagger. I think Dylan Cruz is going to step in and give that swagger that Nats fans got used to from like a Bryce Harper and a Juan Soto. How much do you think he's going to bring the team in terms of energy and that sort of dynamic in the clubhouse and in the dugout?
That's a great point. I haven't really thought of it too much in that sense, but I think you're right. I think Dylan is more of an outspoken kind of guy. I mean, like they all do, he plays with like his hair on fire, but you know, when it comes to talking with the media, when it comes to talking to, you know, being around the guys, he's a little more outspoken. And I think that comes with, you know, being the best player in college baseball a couple of years ago. He's used to the spotlight, right? I mean, James Wood and C.J. Abrams were both drafted out of high school and didn't really have that kind of adjustment period when it comes to being in the spotlight as much. Sure, they were in, like, high school circuits, and, you know, I know James said IMG and everything, but it's very different than playing, you know, at LSU and being on a national championship team and then being a number two overall pick. I think that kind of aspect that Dylan is going to be used to, he will be a little more vocal. And you're right, that is just more his personality as opposed to James and CJ. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic as well. And I think it's be good for that clubhouse too to have somebody a little more outspoken and take leadership. Now, the good thing is too, this is going to be such a young team. All these guys have spend a significant amount of time together. A lot of them came up through Rochester together. So there's not going to be that need or adjustment period of camaraderie between them all. So they're all kind of pretty much used to each other and, you know, who leads in certain ways. So that's a good thing, though, is that you're not going to have, you know, guys stumbling over each other or rubbing each other the wrong way, because they all should be pretty familiar with each other from their time, not just this year, but end of last year through spring training. And then now here we are at the major leagues together.
What did you make of Mackenzie Gore yesterday? It seemed like in his last start that he had found something for the first five innings, and he struggled in the sixth. Yesterday, he's able to get through six, only giving up the one run. Has he found something that he can maybe build on down the stretch here?
I hope so, and I think so. I mean, these last two outings have been very encouraging. I was in the one in Philadelphia, and that was a big one because, you know, they had worked on him in his bullpen session leading up to that. They were trying to adjust some things, get him lower in the zone, kind of getting him to reset. I don't think they seriously considered shutting him down or whatever, but you know, we're getting close to that point where, you know, if he kept going down that trajectory of how bad he has been over the past couple of months, something had to be done. He turned that around in Philly. He pitched 5 strong innings. I know he ended up getting charged with 4 in the 6th, where it kind of all fell apart. But those first 5 innings looked more like vintage Mackenzie Gore. And then last night was terrific. Yeah, he got hit 7 times, but only gave up 1 run. The no walks is big for me, too. I think that was his first appearance without a walk since, I think, the last time he faced the Braves earlier this year. So that was a big step forward for him. So I do think it's encouraging. These last 2 combined outings, only giving up a total of 6 runs and really only 1 bad inning between, you know, 12 almost. So hopefully that's another step forward. You figure he's probably got between like 5 and 7 starts left of the year. Hopefully those are similar like that and strong. He can stay low in the zone. He can not issue the free walk, keep the ball in the yard. I know the leadoff homer last night, everyone's thinking, oh, boy, here we go again. But give Mackenzie a lot of credit. He buckled down from there and pretty much shut down that Braves lineup from that first batter on.
Bobby, appreciate the time, man. Make sure you check out all of his work at massinsports.com, and appreciate you hopping on, dude.
Yeah, thanks, Toby. Thanks for having me. Can I see you Monday?
Of course. Come on, Bobby. I think hopefully all of D.C. is there on Monday. That's what we're hoping.
Yeah, I think
kick all these Yankees fans out.
Yeah. Fill in that spark, red and white, not blue and pinstripes.
Absolutely. Bobby, appreciate it, dude.
All right. Thanks, Toby. Have a good one.
There you heard from Bobby Blanco from massinsports.com, and he joined us in the BetQL guest hotline. Sports betting has come to the DMV. Don't place that first bet without checking with BetQL. BetQL analyzes every game to find you the most profitable betting opportunities. Get 3 free days of BetQL access by downloading the BetQL app or visiting BetQL.com. Let's take a break, then we'll wrap up talking some more Nats here on Overtime on The Fan. We'll have Nats and Braves coming up at 7:20 tonight. Charlie and Dave on the call. Jake Irvin on the hill for the Nats. Charlie Morton for the Braves. Irvin has been impressive this year. He's got a 3.81 ERA, a 9-10 record, but he's been the Nationals' best pitcher all year. He's been fun to watch, and he's been someone that kind of came out of nowhere. And the Nats have had a couple of those guys, and it kind of gives you hope for the rebuild, because now you throw in the guys like James Wood, who made his debut July 1st and kind of ushered in some extra excitement. The guy that's debuting on Monday, Dylan Cruz, brings a little bit more, and Brady House down the line. Like, those guys are the cornerstone pieces, but when you can fill in some of the other cracks with guys that were 20th-ranked prospects, not ranked like a Jacob Young, you know, Mitchell Parker was ranked 20th coming into this year. He's proved to be a solid pitcher for this team and bounced back really nicely in his last outing from a disaster in Philadelphia. You got Jake Irvin, and he's been, you know, pretty steady Eddie most of the year. He's had some struggles of late, but when you look back at some of the starts that he had and, you know, the middle of the season, he looked like a dude. My favorite game of the year so far is probably that 4th of July game, and Irvin was on the mound for that, only gave up 1 hit over 8 innings. He's been really, really impressive this season, so we'll see what he can do tonight for the Nationals. Charlie Morton is on the hill for the Braves, and the Nationals have had some success against Morton. They haven't faced him since June 8th, but they faced him on May 27th, and he only went 5 2/3, gave up 12 hits, 8 runs, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, and then they faced him again on June the 8th, and he went 5 innings and gave up 5 runs, 4 of them earned. So maybe the Nationals can take advantage of Charlie Morton being on the hill tonight after the Nationals lost last night. Although, you know, the encouraging thing about last night was that it seemed like Mackenzie Gore got things going in the right direction, and he had struggled. He'd been in a bad way for basically the last couple of months. So it was really good to see him get things going. He's got the stuff to be a frontline type of starter, but at some point you got to start showing some of those results, and hopefully down the stretch here he can seem to find something. But I wanted to wrap up by talking about one thing that I think, you know, I brought it up with Bobby. You talk about Dylan Cruz, and that's obviously the big news for the Nationals. He's going to debut on Monday. I think he provides something that this team just doesn't have right now, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it isn't even necessarily baseball related. It's talking about that leadership, that excitement, that persona. You know, when you think about Bryce Harper and what he brought and what he brings to Philadelphia now, when he came up, he was brash. He was that guy. He was the dude. when you think about even a Juan Soto and the Soto shuffle and the fun and the exuberance and the youthfulness. You know, it was different than Bryce. Bryce was almost like brash, you know, dude, athlete, like stereotype, whereas Soto was more the fun, playful kind of guy, but he still brought that sort of energy. I think Dylan Cruz is maybe more along the Harper lines of that sort of confident jock kind of athlete. They just don't have that right now, and there's nothing wrong with that. But CJ's a very quiet leader. He has some swag. You know, he'll stare at a home run when he hits it, but it's nothing over the top. You know, James Wood is very, very quiet. And I think what Dylan Cruz is going to bring to this baseball team is just a swagger and an attitude that is just lacking a little bit. They don't have that guy that is just over the top, like, we are going to crush you this three-game series. They just don't have that dude. It's not to say that the guys don't want it. You know, you see Mackenzie Gore get fired up coming off the mound. You've seen Jake Irvin get pumped up coming off the mound. But for the most part, all these guys are very reserved. I think Dylan Cruz is going to bring out something in this baseball team. And so, you know, like I laid out, Craig Hoffman asked me when James Wood had made his debut, what's his relationships going to be with the fans? It's similar to me how Strasburg and Scherzer kind of work. Now, Scherzer was the better pitcher overall. Strasburg was the better postseason guy. But when you walk around Nationals Park, everyone was wearing Scherzer jerseys, although at times Strasburg was better. I think that's how it's going to end up being. I think that Wood might be the best player on the baseball team going in the future. I think a lot of people are going to be wearing number 3 Dylan Cruz jerseys because I think those two combined create a core that is really something to get excited about. You got the leadership of Cruz, and you've got the fantastic MVP caliber player in James Wood. It's a lot of fun. It's going to do it for us. Appreciate Max doing all the hard work as we're trying to watch college football and work on a Saturday. How could we do it? We found a way to do it and get through 3 hours. Appreciate you guys listening. I'm Toby Altizer, signing off. We'll have Nats and Braves coming up at 7:20 tonight. Charlie and Dave on the call. Jake Irvin on the hill for the Nats. Charlie Morton for the Braves. Irvin has been impressive this year. He's got a 3.81 ERA, a 9-10 record, but he's been the Nationals' best pitcher all year. He's been fun to watch, and he's been someone that kind of came out of nowhere. And the Nats have had a couple of those guys, and it kind of gives you hope for the rebuild, because now you throw in the guys like James Wood, who made his debut July 1st and kind of ushered in some extra excitement. The guy that's debuting on Monday, Dylan Cruz, brings a little bit more, and Brady House down the line. Like, those guys are the cornerstone pieces. But when you can fill in some of the other cracks with guys that were 20th-ranked prospects, not ranked like a Jacob Young, you know, Mitchell Parker was ranked 20th coming into this year. He's proved to be a solid pitcher for this team and bounced back really nicely in his last outing from a disaster in Philadelphia. You got Jake Irvin, and he's been, you know, pretty steady Eddie most of the year. He's had some struggles of late. But when you look back at some of the starts that he had and, you know, the middle of the season, he looked like a dude. My favorite game of the year so far is probably that 4th of July game, and Irvin was on the mound for that, only gave up one hit over 8 innings. He's been really, really impressive this season, so we'll see what he can do tonight for the Nationals. Charlie Morton is on the hill for the Braves, and the Nationals have had some success against Morton. They haven't faced him since June 8th, but they faced him on May 27th, and he only went 5 2/3, gave up 12 hits, 8 runs, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, and then they faced him again on June the 8th, and he went 5 innings and gave up 5 runs, 4 of them earned. So maybe the Nationals can take advantage of Charlie Morton being on the hill tonight after the Nationals lost last night. Although, you know, the encouraging thing about last night was that it seemed like Mackenzie Gore got things going in the right direction, and he had struggled. He'd been in a bad way for basically the last couple of months. So it was really good to see him get things going. He's got the stuff to be a frontline type of starter, but at some point you got to start showing some of those results, and hopefully down the stretch here he can seem to find something. But I wanted to wrap up by talking about one thing that I think, you know, I brought it up with Bobby. You talk about Dylan Cruz, and that's obviously the big news for the Nationals. He's going to debut on Monday. I think he provides something that this team just doesn't have right now, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it isn't even necessarily baseball related. It's talking about that leadership, that excitement, that persona. You know, when you think about Bryce Harper and what he brought and what he brings to Philadelphia now, when he came up, he was brash, he was that guy, he was the dude. when you think about even a Juan Soto and the Soto shuffle and the fun and the exuberance and the youthfulness. You know, it was different than Bryce. Bryce was almost like brash, you know, dude, athlete, like stereotype, whereas Soto was more the fun, playful kind of guy, but he still brought that sort of energy. I think Dylan Cruz is maybe more along the Harper lines of that sort of confident jock kind of athlete. They just don't have that right now, and there's nothing wrong with that. But CJ's a very quiet leader. He has some swag. You know, he'll stare at a home run when he hits it, but it's nothing over the top. You know, James Wood is very, very quiet. And I think what Dylan Cruz is going to bring to this baseball team is just a swagger and an attitude that is just lacking a little bit. They don't have that guy that is just over the top, like, we are going to crush you this three-game series. They just don't have that dude. It's not to say that the guys don't want it. You know, you see Mackenzie Gore get fired up coming off the mound. You've seen Jake Irvin get pumped up coming off the mound. But for the most part, all these guys are very reserved. I think Dylan Cruz is going to bring out something in this baseball team. And so, you know, like I laid out, Craig Hoffman asked me when James Wood had made his debut, what's his relationship going to be with the fans? It's similar to me how Strasburg and Scherzer kind of work. Now, Scherzer was the better pitcher overall. Stras is the better postseason guy. But when you walk around Nationals Park, everyone was wearing Scherzer jerseys, although at times Strasburg was better. I think that's how it's going to end up being. I think that Wood might be the best player on the baseball team going into the future. I think a lot of people are going to be wearing number 3 Dylan Cruz jerseys because I think those two combined create a core that is really something to get excited about. You got the leadership of Cruz, and you've got the fantastic MVP caliber player in James Wood. It's a lot of fun. It's going to do it for us. Appreciate Max doing all the hard work as we're trying to watch college football and work on a Saturday. How could we do it? We found a way to do it and get through 3 hours. Appreciate you guys listening. I'm Toby Altizer, signing off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.